here's a story from The World.
18 days to go. Every Friday until Election Day, we're gathering the world's reporters to talk about the November 3rd vote through our own international lens. On the docket today, immigration.
The whole world is watching.
The most important election.
Human rights.
Climate change.
Race, immigration.
Value your freedom and democracy. This is what inspires the whole world.
There's been a lot of behind-the-scenes discussions about immigration policies, but they haven't gotten a lot of play in the presidential debates. President Trump did answer a question on immigration in last night's town hall.
We are going to take care of DACA. We're going to take care of DREAMER. It's working right now. We're negotiating different aspects of immigration and immigration law.
With me are the world's immigration editor, Monica Campbell, joining us from San Francisco's Bay Area. Happy Friday, Monica.
Hey, Marco.
And our Europe correspondent, Orla Barry in London. Hey there, Orla.
Hi, Marco.
Monica, let me start with you. Immigration has not come up in a substantive way so far in the debates. After 4 years of practically daily crises around immigration, what do you make of that omission?
I mean, it's a massive contrast to 2016 in the debates and discussion that we saw then, right? At that time, immigration was Trump's signature issue at nearly every appearance, whether he was on the stump or during a debate. Now we're seeing, obviously, the pandemic, protests related to Black Lives Matter, definitely being asked about more in the debates. That makes a lot of sense. But it's also surprising because he's done so much when it comes to immigration, largely closing off the border, reducing legal migration in many ways, and just making it much more difficult for people to come to the United States. So it's something he could point to in terms of a success. At the same time, I'm not surprised that he's not bringing that up because some of the things that the Trump administration has done in terms of, for example, family separation have not been generally popular in the public. So it's perhaps one reason why we're not seeing him kind of shove that issue through during a debate.
So migration policy and debates on immigration may not be featuring in the debates here. But Orla Barry, there in London, as you look back at recent elections across the EU, how has immigration played a role there?
It varies in many ways, Marco, from country to country, as you can imagine. Actually, here in the UK, in our last general election just late last year, when Boris Johnson and his party won a landslide majority, interestingly, immigration was very much not an issue on the doorsteps or in the debates. The pressing issue at the time was the Brexit referendum and getting Brexit done. And in many ways, obviously, the Brexit debate is very much tied up with the immigration issue and the migrant issue. But it wasn't a topic that you heard discussed as much. But I should say at the moment, what we are seeing in terms of sort of a broad EU strategy, we are seeing a new refugee policy being developed in Europe. And it's currently within the hands of 27 EU member states to agree on it. But I'm interested, Monica, in the sort of changes that you're seeing in the US at the moment.
Well, in terms of the US refugee program, it's absolutely drastic. Since Trump came to office, we have seen an immediate slashing of the US refugee program. I mean, it's moved from accepting 85,000 more or less refugees in 2016, in the last year of the Obama administration, to just this month, now we're seeing the Trump administration propose allowing 15,000 refugees into the U.S. for the fiscal year 2020. So it's a historic low. And this week I spoke with Adafi Okporo about this. He's a refugee himself. He's from Nigeria. He lives in New York City. He arrived to New York 4 years ago, and he runs a homeless shelter for refugees in Harlem. And we talked over WhatsApp, over video, and he showed me around the shelter, including what it looks like from the outside. It's an old church in Harlem.
We have a refrigerator in front. It's called Community Fridge. Inside, we put food. Like, homeless people can just walk there and pick up food.
Okporo is showing me around the outside of the church, and there's a refrigerator set up on the sidewalk, and they put food in the refrigerator for people who need it, who come to the shelter, asylum seekers, refugees. And it's just this kind of site on a street in New York City.
Right. I mean, the Frige, as it's known in some places, it's catching on in a number of U.S. cities. So Okporo now dedicates himself full time to helping people like himself. I'm guessing it's probably harder for someone like him to get to the U.S. now, and not just because of the economy and COVID. I'm thinking precisely visa restrictions.
Absolutely. And he kind of feels like he got in just, you know, in the nick of time. He arrived in 2016. He was hoping that his mother in Nigeria would be able to reunite with him in the United States. That's been frozen. And he said, you know, he hasn't seen his mom, well, now for at least 4 years. And his case is absolutely not unique. And I'm wondering, Orla, you mentioned the new migration pact in the EU, and I'm particularly interested in how that's being received.
Yes, interesting. You know, Germany and France are very much promoting it, but actually it's caused upset on both sides in the sense of from countries that traditionally haven't wanted to take in refugees like Hungary and Poland and the Czech Republic. They have been quite vocal against the pact, to NGOs themselves who are working with refugees and asylum seekers. Essentially, under the proposals, countries can either accept asylum seekers or help in the cost of deporting them. And as Human Rights Watch said at the time, you know, asking countries who didn't want asylum seekers to now help deport them is like asking the school bully to walk a kid home. It has to be agreed by the 27 EU member states. Then it has to pass through the EU Council. You know, the EU Council, the EU Parliament, all these stages have to be gone through. And the hope is that they'll sign it by the end of next year. But to be honest, many people believe that it probably won't get through all of those stages.
And Orla, just for a sense of scale, what are the figures now like for migrants traveling to Europe, and where are they traveling from?
Yeah, at the moment, Marco, the estimate in the first 9 months of the year from January to sort of the end of August, start of September, the figure was at around 60,800. This year has also been a particularly strange year, I guess, because of the pandemic, because many countries just use the pandemic to close their borders effectively. So you saw less migrant flow for that very reason.
It's so interesting, Orla, hearing you talk about the restrictions on the border based on the pandemic, because that's what's happening on the U.S.-Mexico border, that we've seen a real wholesale shutdown of the U.S.-Mexico border in the name of protecting people in the United States from any contagion from the coronavirus. You know, it's hard not to see that as a very politicized move. There's definitely a lot of criticism about using the pandemic as an excuse to shut down the border.
Oh, listen, absolutely. I mean, the moment when the restrictions came in, the first countries to close their borders were Hungary, the Czech Republic, Poland. But there's no question that those three countries used it as a way to keep immigrants out.
Well, Monica and Orla, thank you both for a great discussion. Lots to think about with immigration and refugee policies in the remaining days before November 3rd. The World's immigration editor, Monica Campbell, and our Europe correspondent, Orla Barry. Again, thank you and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Marco.
From PRX.